Every true football fan knows that the NFL season truly begins after the Super Bowl champion has been crowned, and the Ringer NFL feed will keep you on top of all the news still happening around the league and heading into the 2024-25 season. I'm Sheil Kapadia, and every Monday and Friday, Ben Solak and I deliver sharp takes and debates on the draft, free agency, training camp, and beyond on Extra Point Taker.
And every Wednesday, we'll have Dual Threat, where Stephen Ruiz and yours truly, Nora Princiati, dive deep into all of the big offseason developments, with Ringer favorites Austin Gale and Lindsey Jones stopping by occasionally to share their expert football analysis.
Subscribe to the Ringer NFL Show on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
And don't forget to follow the Ringer NFL on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and X at Ringer NFL.
This episode is brought to you by Armorall. When you want the best for your car, preparation is everything. That's why teams like Oracle Red Bull Racing use Armorall to prep their team vehicles. From interior cleaning and protectant wipes to car wash and wheel and tire cleaner, Armorall, America's number one trusted auto appearance brand, has what it takes to keep the two-time defending champions looking their best inside and out. And get this, now through May 31st, you can get $5 back when you spend $20 prepping your car like the Oracle Red Bull Racing team. All you have to do is upload your receipt to Armorall's website after you buy. Visit Armorall.com for program details and redemption. Terms apply. Armorall, chosen by champions.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
Hello, welcome to the Ringer F1 Show, part of the Ringer Podcast Network. I am your host, Megan Schuster, and we are here today with a special episode, a chat with former Haas team principal Gunther Steiner. Gunther recently announced that he's joining the Miami Grand Prix as an ambassador this season. We talked about that as well as a host of other topics like where he sees F1 fandom in America going, what it's like to make difficult decisions as a team principal, his relationship with Drive to Survive, as well as memes from Drive to Survive, and some predictions for the rest of this F1 season. It was super fun to chat with Gunther. So without further droning on from me, here is our conversation. Gunther Steiner, certified Netflix star, former team principal for Haas F1. Thank you so much for being here. We're so excited to get to talk to you today.
Thanks for having me.
Are you in North Carolina still these days? Are you somewhere else?
Today I'm in New York City, but I live in North Carolina since 18 years. No. I still live there and stay there.
Amazing. I'm a big North Carolina fan. Very excited that you're still there. You are essentially an F1 institution at this point. You've been in and around the sport for decades. And just today it was announced that you're taking on a new role with the Miami Grand Prix, serving as an ambassador for 2024. Can you tell us a little bit about that role and why did you decide to take it on?
Yeah, after my career as a team principal stopped, I had some different offers to do things. And I do some other things as well. I do some TV work for German TV, but then I know Tom Garfinkel, and we spoke about it, and I think their project, the Miami GP project, is a very cool one. I know it from the beginning because I was there at the first Grand Prix, how they raise the bar in general of Formula One racing, and you know, when you're into Formula One only the last years, you don't know too much about it, but when Miami GP came in with Tom Garfinkel and Steve Ross's vision, they just made the sport. They took it to a different level, it was quite interesting. Oh yeah, I can help you maybe to bring the message out because obviously people know me, but also I can give them. I wouldn't say advice because they don't need my advice to do a good thing, but I can give you my opinion about it, what is going on. So I took this role on, but mainly to tell people what a good event Miami GP is, because I can compare it with other races. So I mean, Miami GP is doing so many things I wouldn't say different, because you cannot do them different. They do more of it, you know. You can have entertainment the whole week. There is a lot of racing going on there on the weekend with Porsche Super Cup, the F1 Academy, the female drivers. It is a sprint event, so there is a qualifying on Friday, a race on Saturday, another qualifying on Saturday, and then the race on Sunday. You know, it's just like for the fans, it is a good place to go there with the whole family to get close to F1. And with general admission, you can buy a campus ticket where you can get very close to the action, so you can actually smell, hear these cars, which are very exciting, and you can have also a peek inside, that, because from the stadium you can see the people which work within Formula One. So if people watch the Drive to Survive, they can actually go and see them people a little bit closer than on TV. So for me, it was a good opportunity to do things to make the sport even more known or better known in the United States mainly, but also internationally. A lot of people know me, and I think Miami is just a cool place, and they bring together a lot of celebrities there. You know, Mark Anthony singing the national anthem. It's pretty cool, these things. And, you know, you can eat different foods. There's so much to do, because I could talk another 20 minutes about that, you know. But I think I've got other questions as well.
Yeah. We're going into year three in the Miami race. I got to go last year. Like you said, it's a very, very cool event. We've seen it become almost something of a mini Monaco in terms of the celebrity and the event status within the States. Where do you see this event kind of growing in the future, and where do people around the grid kind of place it in terms of races these days?
I would say I shouldn't compare it with Monte Carlo. I think as an event, it's actually better because it's bigger. You've got the big city, Miami, around. I think people, you know, Monte Carlo is actually a small event, but Miami is a big event, you know. Where I see it going every year, there is improvements made, there is more put on. I don't know when it will stop, but in Miami, you always have more way to go. You know, you can do just more. I mean, a lot of celebrities want to go there, because it is not only that you go to the racetrack, you watch the race, you have the entertainment there. In the evening, you can go to Miami, which is only 20 minutes away, you know. So where it goes, I think the sky is the limit here.
Miami's obviously become kind of a huge American draw in F1, but you've been helping grow the sport in the U.S. for over a decade now, long before this race, even before Drive to Survive came out. What about the U.S. audience was such a draw for you, and how did you sort of identify that this could be an area of growth for Formula One?
I think Formula One neglected a little bit the United States before Liberty Media came in. Liberty Media came in, and so they acquired Formula One because they saw the potential in it. And that's what they did. They grew it. And then we went from one race in the United States now to three races. And I think, again, there is more growth. And I think we've got a lot of audience now knowing about Formula One in the United States. And I see it. I moved to the United States 18 years ago and still live there. Or still live here, because I'm here in the moment. So live here, you know. And I think it can grow more. But now the next step is people want to go and see races, and that's what they should be doing, you know. Because there you can feel it, and you get attracted even more.
Yeah, when you were in the U.S., you know, 18 years ago, like you said, even in 2014, and you'd say you worked for a Formula One team or helping launch a Formula One team. How different was the reception then versus now? Because I can't imagine 10 years ago, people would have predicted, like you said, we have three races, we have an American driver on the grid now. I'm sure it was a very different reception than you're getting now when you're in Miami or at one of these other races.
Absolutely. And when I had this idea to build a Formula One team out of the States and finding an investor, and I found Gene Haas, it was nobody believed really in it, you know, because Formula One was not watched. People knew about it, but the interest rate was low. And then obviously Liberty Media took over, and they made it more popular in the US. And there I would say that is also why I like Miami, because Stephen Ross and Tom Garfinkel had this vision, like I had grown up a team in the US. They had the vision to make a Grand Prix which stands out of all the other ones. So I think that's why I like the Miami GP as well a lot, because that as well, there is a vision. Let's do it, you know. Obviously, I couldn't do it because I don't have the financial means, so I had to find somebody who does it. But I mean, what Miami did was similar to what I did 10 years ago, try to push Formula One into the US because it is a very interesting sport. And I think we will have years of growth coming from it.
Yeah, the growth of the US audience was really a huge kind of talking point, I think, right around 2021, sort of when Drive to Survive is taking off. And then you're getting, of course, the very dramatic title race between Max and Lewis that season that I think drew a lot of fans in who had never really watched the sport before. In seasons since, though, we've seen it return to something a little more normal when you have, you know, some Red Bull dominance and, you know, someone like Max Verstappen kind of getting out ahead of things. What do you think newer F1's fans need to know about enjoying the sport kind of across all levels, even when we have a season like last year where we saw more dominance out of one team?
Yeah, that's normally not normal, such a dominance, and it will end. I mean, we saw it last race weekend in Melbourne. Ferrari was a 1-2, you know, and all dominance is finished. So I think but in Formula One, there is so much to be seen. It's not only about who is winning. Obviously, who is winning is the most interesting thing. I mean, there is no denial of that one, but it will change again. And we had Mercedes dominating for 7 years, you know, and then not anymore. I don't think this time it stays 7 years, the domination. And I see already that Ferrari can challenge them. So I think sometimes you just have to go through these phases where one driver and one team is better than the other ones, but it will turn around. But in the time in between, there is a lot of fights or a lot of racing going on in the midfield there. There's a lot of other interesting stuff. And sometimes it's actually good to focus a little bit on that. So you get the perspective of the whole field. There's not only two cars fighting for the win. There is 18 other cars fighting for every point which is available. So it's quite interesting to look at that one as well. And it's just like, it needs to be a little bit of variety, the sport.
Is there anything you think F1 needs to do differently to kind of continue encouraging growth in the States or just keeping the fans that they've gotten over the last few years? You know, like you said before, three races here now, they're doing a lot of in-person things with car launches and press opportunities. But is there anything from a competitive standpoint you think the sport needs to do to kind of keep retaining these new fans?
No, I think what the sport needs to do is it needs to stabilize what we have got now because the growth was good. It was fantastic. There is very good spectators now, the quantity, the quality. So I think it needs to stabilize now. In general, I think regulation-wise, we are in a good place. Obviously, one team being better than the other ones, they did a better job. But in 2026, I don't know if you may know, there's the regulation change complete again. New engines, new car regulations, complete different. Not complete different cars, you know, they will be a little bit smaller again to get them lighter. So, and that could change completely the pecking order of the teams, you know, so there's always some change there coming. So, in general, it just needs to be stabilized in the United States, the sport, that the people which were attracted to the sport stay with the sport because it is a good sport.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about the role of team principal at large because you have so much experience with it. And I feel like it's a role that newer fans maybe don't understand the full intricacies of it and the breadth of it and everything that it entails. What's the best part of that job? And also, what's the worst part? Because I'm sure there are some very, very high highs when the team is doing well and things are going well, and probably also some lows with so much pressure and stress on your shoulders in that kind of a role.
Yeah. The best thing of being a team principal is when you go racing, you know, because there you can show how your work is, what you did at home, you know, because being a team principal is, I compare it to be a CEO of a big, small company. You have to do, you have to put so many different hats on and some of them, you know, I never really dislike to do anything. There is things you like to do better, which when you're a racer, the best, the most you like is going racing. Administrative sure. Stuff is not what you like to do normally, but you still have to do it. It's part of your job. And I think all of us in life, we have got, when you do a job, there is part you like better and you like, you actually don't like. So there's nothing different in there with the team principal. But I mean, the pressure is pretty high, I would say, for a job. And what I always say as well is you cannot just decide to be a team principal. You really want to do it because otherwise it's no point that you're going to do it. You will do a bad job because it is a 24-hour, 7 days a week job.
Yeah, I can only imagine. We've seen some difficult on-track decisions already, you know, from team principals this season, like James Vowles with the Logan Sargeant, Alex Albon car situation and things in Australia. when you're at the head of a team and you're making a decision like that, what are the kinds of things that go into something like that? And how much of it is a balance between sort of maximizing your team performance and points and things, and also kind of managing your drivers and their expectations and what they're hoping to get out of a weekend?
To go direct to that decision, I think, James, it's the right thing to, in my opinion, to put Alex in that car, because obviously statistically you could see he was the guy which scored more points, and there is nothing which stands above the team, and the driver is just part of a team. It's not about the driver, it's about the team. That's what they're there for. The guy which changes the tire from everybody working in the factory, it's about the team, and you do need to maximize the result for the team, you know. So I think I would have done the same. Obviously, to tell Logan this, it's never a nice job. This is one of the jobs you don't want to do as a team principal, you know. That's an example. But I think also that you have to raise the question, why did we not have a spare chassis?
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, that is the next question, because it's not about taking one driver out and putting the other one on. The real question is why there was not a spare chassis, you know, like I would say every other team has got. So I cannot answer that question to you. I'm sorry, because I don't know. I haven't spoken with James, but that would be my question. Why do I not have a spare chassis?
Yeah. What is the difference like working and, you know, having those sort of difficult conversations, say, between a young driver or a more experienced driver? Because I know you've worked with both throughout your career. And how do you sort of communicate that to somebody who's in, say, their second season versus somebody like, you know, a Kevin Magnussen and Nico Hülkenberg, who's been around for much, much longer and sort of understands the machinations maybe a bit more?
But maybe they don't want a more experienced driver would argue more that he should stay in the car than a young driver, because the young driver is like, if I argue here, maybe next year I don't have a seat, you know. So it can go both ways. It's more down to the individual than the how experienced or how long they are driving. I would say it's never like this talk is never easy, because you make somebody unhappy, to be honest, you know. But you know, in life, sometimes you have to make these conversations, and you try to explain it. And as I said before, you explain it. Statistically, the team is better off doing what we are doing. It's not a personal preference. You just explain it like this. It is what we need to do for the team.
Yeah.
And for sure, experience or not experience, the guy you telling it, it will be unhappy.
Sure. Right. I know you're close with plenty of team principals on the grid. We saw some of your and Mattia Binotto's friendship and Drive to Survive seasons. But I wanted to ask you, you know, we see a lot of the serious side of team principals, but who are the most fun team principals on the grid to be around? Because I feel like there have to be some, you know, we see like Fred Vasseur and things like that showing a good sense of humor. You've obviously shown a great sense of humor. Who are some of the most fun to be around on the grid?
I would say definitely most fun is Fred and Dr. You know, the two of them. And maybe also I say that because I've got the best relationship with them too. I mean, I know Christian as well, pretty well, because I worked with him years ago. But them two have got a very good sense of humor. Also, Laurent Mackis from Visa Kasha Barbie, I know him. But again, because I know these people a long time, it's much easier to have fun with somebody you know pretty well, because you know he gets your sense of humor and I get theirs, because you just know each other since a long time. That is the most important thing. All the other ones, they're a little bit, I would say, newer, most of them, and therefore I don't have the relationship with them as good as with the other one. I've got a good relationship, but not into making jokes, and maybe they are a little bit drier than them.
Sure, that makes sense. I have to ask you a few Drive to Survive questions, because the show has taken on such a life in the States, 6 seasons now. You were, if not the main character of season 1, then certainly one of them. You became very beloved early on in the show. When you signed up, did you have any idea what it would become in the US?
No. It's a very short answer. No, I had no idea, because when this all this started, nobody had any idea what this will make happen going forward, you know. So it was, if I think back now, how little we cared about it, it's quite amazing, you know. No, I mean, I had no idea what this will do, you know, and, you know, ignorance is bliss, you know, so it helped a lot. But how it ended up, I think it ended up good for everybody involved in Formula One.
Yeah. What drew you into participating in it initially? Because, you know, season one, we didn't have the participation of, say, Mercedes, Ferrari, some of the people leading the pack. But, you know, people like you and Daniel Ricciardo really seemed to shine. And I'm curious what made you want to be part of that.
I would say I didn't put any effort in to do this. You know, it was just like I was doing my normal work. And obviously, when they filmed it, they got good things out of it. But because it was never done before, you had nothing to compare. So you had no idea what you were doing. Or I didn't know what I was doing. Maybe, you know, somebody else had. But as you said, some people didn't even take part the first season. And then the second season, they couldn't wait to get into it, you know, because they saw what happened. So sometimes I took out of that. Sometimes you need to be adventurous, you know. You just need to do it. And, you know, if it all goes wrong, the show is not successful. So who cares? Because I didn't invest a lot in it. I just did my job and somebody else filmed it.
Yeah, sure. I have to ask you about the memes because you've been part of so many of the show's most memorable moments. Which ones get brought up to you the most often?
I'm not into social media, I must admit, you know, so I'm pretty ignorant on that one in the moment. So I don't know which ones come up most. My daughter sometimes brings some up, but I try to ignore them, you know, because otherwise you start to watch yourself, and that's not what I want to do.
Yeah, very fair. Has anyone
you like most? Put it this way.
I like the boat photo shoot was one of my favorites. That one was pretty great. Something that I see get brought up a lot. But another one too, I think is just you and Mattia at the winery and in the vineyards. That seems to be a long lasting one. Has anyone approached you guys about doing a wine club or a wine show or anything? Because I feel like if not, that's a missed opportunity.
No, because if we do these things, we're ending up drinking all the wine ourselves, you know. So, but not really. I mean, people spoke about it, but I don't know what you're... I mean, obviously, I will see Mattia this year. I speak with him frequently every week. I think every week or every 2 weeks, we have a chat about things, but I don't know what we're going to do this year.
Before I let you go, can we do some kind of quick predictions about this season? I'm curious for your take on if you're expecting another year of Red Bull dominance or if you think Ferrari has a chance to challenge them a bit like they did in Australia.
I think the chance is there that Ferrari challenged them because Australia, they were good actually compared with the Red Bull. You know, obviously Red Bull maybe was not of their best track in their best form, but then we have to see when the upgrades come in. They start to come in from Miami GP, I would say, you know, the big upgrades. Mm-hmm. So what is happening there? Who is doing a better job? So McLaren is not far off as well. They are not there yet, right. But they are far off as well. So there could be some surprises, but I think that is what keeps it interesting.
Yeah. And I know we're only three races in, but who have you been most impressed with out of the midfield teams so far? And which, if any, do you think could kind of emerge from the pack at the end of this year?
I think I was pretty impressed by McLaren, what they did, especially in the last race. You know, they have got two good drivers, you know, solid good drivers, very young, you know. But also, they're doing a good job. I mean, I think if they get a little bit lucky, they can challenge for a win this year.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you think it would be Lando or Oscar or either one of them?
Either one of them. Difficult to say. They're both very good. Obviously, normally I should say Lando because he's more experienced, but Oscar is a good driver.
Yeah. It seems like we could get a lot of driver movement this year. Not a whole lot of drivers under contract for 2025. Obviously, we saw kind of the big domino fall with Lewis earlier this year, deciding to go to Ferrari. What was your reaction when you heard that news? And was it surprising to you or was it something that you could have kind of seen coming?
No, it was surprising, but I wasn't shocked by his decision. I mean, he's now 11 years at Mercedes. I think it's his last change of team in his career, in his driving career. And, you know, somehow the drivers have got all a little bit the dream of going to Ferrari in them. I don't know anybody who wouldn't do that. And then we need to go back. His relationship with Fred Vasseur, it's very good. They are friends because... Lewis drove Fred Vasseur's cars in the lower formulas in his young age. So I think if you see it now, it makes sense what he's doing. You know, it's nothing, it's not shocking. Obviously, it came a little bit of surprise because you think, oh, but why is he changing now? He could finish his career at Mercedes and just be a Mercedes driver forever. But he wants a new challenge, which I understand as well.
When you're a team principal and you're entering a silly season like this, where it seems like you have so many driver options and, you know, things are maybe uncertain for the next year, how early are you starting to have those kind of conversations and starting to reach out to people about what could be possible?
I think you reach out as soon as you can. You will not get an answer, but at least you're in contact. And you know, when you speak with one, you hear what the other one is doing. You just keep your ear on the ground. But because I think before the Mercedes seat is filled, nothing will be moving. That will trigger then the next moves, because that is the most thought after seat in the moment, you know. And Toto is not in a hurry to decide as well, because he can have anybody he wants, because everybody wants it.
Who would you most like to see in that Mercedes seat next year? Who do you think would be the most interesting to go up against George?
I would like to see Nico Hülkenberg in it, because I think Nico, not because only I know him, but he's a good driver. He never had the opportunity to shine in his career because he made decisions. He always was at the wrong time, at the wrong place. Not always, not at the perfect. I think he can do more than he has shown in his career. And having the opportunity to drive a Mercedes for a German driver would be something nice. But I don't know. I mean, Carlos Sainz is a good candidate for that seat as well, I would say. So there is more than one. And then obviously Toto will be looking at Kimi Antonelli to put him in there, the young driver, which is an F2. Again, no, he's not in a hurry, because Kimi needs to show what he's able to do in F2. But I mean, I think on a personal level, I would see, not only on a personal level to be nice, but I think he could do a good job is also Nico.
That would be really fun. Which events are you most looking forward to the rest of the way this season? And what, you know, kind of are you most excited to watch the rest of this season?
My next event is Miami, obviously, as a Miami ambassador, which I really look forward to go to. And I hope a lot of people go to as well, you know, I see there. So, I think for me, the rest of the season, I just go to the races where I've got something to do. And it's quite nice not to go to all the races, just to the nice ones, you know,
yeah.
Go from there and not to have to do the full calendar.
Yeah, it's a long calendar this year for sure. Very nice to have a little bit of a break for you, I'm sure. Thank you, Gunther, so much for joining us. So nice chatting with you, and very excited to see what you get up to in Miami in a few weeks.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.